this is why I'm gonna get real with y'all. Okay. If the very first sign of any adversity, you're giving up on your business, you're probably not going to make it through to be successful in the business anyway. Because what happens if a partner backs out on a deal with you? What happens if a deal goes south for whatever reason? What happens if whatever? There's a million things that can pop up, right? And if you're in a mindset to where everything's got to go perfect, and if any adversity comes in front of me, I'm going to stop and give up because it's not easy. I would highly suggest you do one of two things. One of them be really, really dig in and see how bad you want this. Okay, if this is something you want bad, you should be excited as heck that that law got passed in Illinois, because you know what it's going to do? It's going to filter out a bunch of the people who are going to be clutter in the market. So go get the darn license if that's what you need to do. Be excited as heck that your competition just got thinned out. What's up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of the Carrot Cast. I've got another returning Carrot Cast alumni coming on this episode. Carrot Cast alumni, Carrot Camp alumni, one of my favorite dudes anywhere. And guys, I'm going to reintroduce you guys to Daniel DiGiacomo here in a second. But you guys probably have had a chance to run by him in many different spots. He's been on the Carrot Cast. I've been in some of our training. I dove in on our original Facebook course with us. And when I think about a guy that has a lot of experience in lots of different parts of real estate, and a guy that's amazing at building a buyer's list, but also just amazing at lots of different types, Daniel pops up in my mind. And also one of our team members, Pete, has been working with Daniel for, you know, past year or two. We'll probably get into that. And so I see that this stuff is real. And that's one of the things a lot of people look at and go, well, like, how much of what you see online is real? And we actually see the leads that are coming in behind the scenes. We see what's happening with what we can see with the deals that you guys are closing together, man. I'm always impressed. So welcome back to the Carrot Cast, Daniel DiGiacomo.
Happy to be here. It's been a fantastic last, 4 or 5 years I've been with Carrot. It's been great.
I love it, man. So I want to give people a little bit of context. We're not going to tell your whole story. We'll link up your previous Carrot Cast in the show notes. So if people want to dive back and go like, who is this Daniel guy? What's his backstory? How to get where he is? We talk about all of that in the first episode of the Carrot Cast that he's on. So we'll link it up. Go check out that one if you want to dig into that more. And he also teaches a ton of stuff that he was doing to really break through and grow the leads that he's gotten online and offline. But dude, give people some context. Where are you at? What's your market or markets? What is your business currently primarily do? Like, what type of real estate do you primarily focus on now?
Sure. Yeah. The quick backstory of my experience in real estate. I got started about 10 years ago as a landlord. I bought some rentals. I didn't really know much about real estate investment beyond you're either a landlord and owned rentals, or you're an agent and represented transactions. So got involved as a landlord. I knew I didn't want to be transaction based, at least from like a service standpoint. Funny thing is, now most of my business is wholesaling, which is super service oriented, and I love it. So started out as a landlord, like I said, put some rentals into the portfolio. And I mean, I scaled it. I didn't do anything crazy. But just through networking with my attorneys and title companies and different strategists in the real estate space, that's how I learned about wholesaling. Mm-hmm. Thought that was something I could scale. And that's primarily what I've been focused on. In between landlording and wholesaling, I've done some other things like invest in tax liens. I've done some fix and flips. I've built some brand new houses. I've done a bunch of different stuff. But the only thing that I've really focused on scaling has been the wholesaling business.
Cool. And dude, and like I say, guys and gals, go listen to the first episode, because he does talk about a lot of the stuff that he did early on. And your business has even shifted a little bit in the last year and a half since we did that. So what I want to do now, there's a couple topics, y'all. Why did we bring Daniel back on? There's a few things. One of them, we are going to talk about some of those recent laws that passed in Illinois. And honestly, guys, I think that there's going to be more of that to come in more states. Now, some of them are going to take forever. Some of them aren't going to do it at all. But with the shift that we have in the industry, the National Association of Realtors has a massive lobby. House flippers, wholesalers don't have much of a lobby. And so I think you're going to start to see a lot more pressure around the country with NAR and more of the state governments. We'll talk about that. But I also want to kind of unpack also. So we wrapped up our most recent Carrot Camp here a couple weeks ago, and it was an amazing Carrot Camp. And one of the topics that came up at this Carrot Camp and the last Carrot Camp that people are struggling in is when they have that, when you're in that revenue from between 100,000 to let's say 750,000 a year in wholesaling or flipping, you're at the point where you're needing to start to build a team, right? And that was the biggest issue that they're confronting. When you were out here, I think it was three or four Carrot Camps ago, that was also something that you knew that you had to confront. And I want to bring that up on this podcast, talk about what you've done since then, the pains, the wins, things like that. But let's start with some of the laws that are passing. So I know you are doing business in multiple states. You talk to a lot of people, you're doing lots of types of real estate. What are you seeing, kind of what's your impression on the law changes that could be happening over the next 5-10 years in the real estate side? Is it something wholesalers and flippers should be scared of, or how should they prepare?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about this. It's something I've researched fairly well. I won't get into like super specifics about different legislative acts or whatever it is, but I'll talk about what my experience is and what my research has been and my reaction, and also sort of my prediction almost in terms of a timeline on when I think things change and where. So I started paying attention a couple of years ago. I involved myself in local politics here in Maryland. My backyard is Baltimore. That's where we do more than 50% of our real estate business. So I just involved myself in some local politics stuff here. I just wanted to know what the local legislature was doing, wanted to know what my city was doing. And I just started paying attention. That process quickly brought me to realize that whoever's got the money is influencing the direction of politics and the direction of legislation for the most part. So like I said, I really paid attention to what lobbyists were spending what kind of money and what kind of bills they were trying to influence. And I started tracking the National Association of Realtors. I guess it started with me tracking Maryland Association of Realtors and just kind of getting an idea of what they're spending in Maryland, who they're talking to, what they're trying to influence in terms of rental laws, agency laws, et cetera. Yeah, so I really just started, like I said, paid attention to where the money was being spent and why and what. And this goes back 3 or 4 years ago. I started paying attention to the process in Maryland. And Maryland Association of Realtors and National Association of Realtors started spending a lot of money trying to strengthen agency laws, try to strengthen real estate interest laws, so how investors interact with consumers. They haven't made a whole lot of progress in Maryland necessarily, so there's not been a ton of legislation in Maryland related to wholesaling. But I also wanted to point out that National Association of Realtors has spent a total of $73 million in the last 12 months, and an additional $12 million just in the first couple of months of this year. So not all the reports are out, but if you think about it, they've spent $73 million trying to influence laws related to real estate, essentially to protect their base, which are agents, right? So their job is to represent the interest of agents, and they'd like to see everyone be an agent. I guess this started about 12 months ago. They started hammering away at Illinois, spent some intelligent money in Illinois, and that's when they got some stuff on the books there, which is what everyone's talking about right now.
Oh, I was going to say, I was talking with, I think it was Brent Moreno, and he was bringing up, I haven't read that law, so I don't want to like make stuff up. Number one, guys, I'm not an attorney. Daniel's not an attorney, I don't believe. So this isn't legal advice. We're giving you guys information to then go take and do research. Make sure that you guys in your individual states are doing what you need to do. But I heard that there's even some clauses in there that limit the amount of properties that a person can actually buy in a year without a license, which sounds kind of crazy, right? It's like, man, so they're trying to do like, let's go for like the biggest ask we can get. And then what's going to happen is I think you're probably going to start to see some of those crazier parts of it get pulled off and peeled out. But they got a pretty big ask through, which is crazy. Which, yeah, in the state of Illinois, at least the way it's currently written, you can only buy a certain amount of properties, even if you're going to keep them without a license, which is kind of wild.
Yeah, it is wild. Like you said, they got through a huge ask, and there's a huge difference between a law being passed and then a law being enforced. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, and I'm not suggesting, again, I'm not an attorney either, right? You mentioned this, so I'm not suggesting you run a business without seeking adequate counsel. But the laws, you know, laws will change. They'll be adapted. This law that passed in Illinois was a rewrite of a law that was passed in 2000, right? So it really was just a rewrite. It will be rewritten again. And that sort of brings me to my next thought on this. I don't want to spend the whole time talking about Illinois, But laws change in business, environments change, all kinds of, you know, investor needs change. So customer needs change, all kinds of stuff changes. And the people that sort of the cream that rises to the top, are the guys and gals that, that adapt. Mm-hmm. So pay it like from where I'm at, number one, I'm not a big government guy. The more laws on the books, sort of the worse the economy chugs along, in my opinion. Yep. I'm not going to make this political at all, but I'm just not a huge fan of big government. At the same time, I'm not opposed to legislation that protects consumers, right? Mm-hmm. So, and one of the things I was talking about with an investor friend of mine just the other day, laws don't get written because of the people that are doing the business well. Laws get written because of the one or two bad actors that pop up, right?
Yep.
So, adaption is key. If you're in the business in any state and laws start popping up here and there, there's different states that where lobbying activity is a little heavier than others. So just sort of be prepared and just be prepared to adapt. Right.
Mm-hmm. Dude, the last part you mentioned, I think, is the biggest thing. We, it was really, really interesting. The week that the Illinois one came out, we had two or three customers that had hit the cancel button on the Carrot system that specifically said, well, I can't wholesale in Illinois. Like literally, dude, days after the law was on a blog post announcing it, people were giving up. And this is something, y'all, that this is like where I want to get real with this. And we're going to switch over to some of the stuff that Daniel's learning about leadership and growing his team and what he's been doing since Carrot Camp. But this is where I want to get real with y'all. Okay. If the very first sign of any adversity, you're giving up on your business, you're probably not going to make it through to be successful in the business anyway. Because what happens if a partner backs out on a deal with you? What happens if a deal goes south for whatever reason? What happens if whatever? There's a million things that can pop up, right? And if you're in a mindset to where everything's got to go perfect, and if any adversity comes in front of me, I'm going to stop and give up because it's not easy, I would highly suggest you do one of two things. One of them be really, really dig in and see how bad you want this. Okay, if this is something you want bad, you should be excited as heck that that law got passed in Illinois, because you know what it's going to do? It's going to filter out a bunch of the people who are going to be clutter in the market. So go get the darn license if that's what you need to do. Be excited as heck that your competition just got thinned down. Okay, but if you're one of the ones who's going to give up, it's like, oh man, just go find a different career that you can be pumped about, that you can stick with, or go work for an investor who has that mindset, the mental fortitude to push through the adversity. For sure. So guys, that's that. We're not going to talk a lot about the law side of it, but we know it is popping up. And so the one thing I'm going to finish with, I'll toss over to you to finish the law part, then we're going to move over to building the team, man, which I really want to talk about. But is what I believe is going to happen, and I talked about this in a podcast a year or two ago as well, is this is what I feel is going to happen, y'all, is number one, market's very, very competitive, right? Because we're at the top end of the market. Number two, you've got two shifts that are happening: tech disruption and a lot of competition. Okay. Tech disruption, what happens there is when an industry starts to get disrupted, the big players in it start to add regulation. Okay. So you saw that happen in newspapers. You saw that happen in TV. You saw that happen in satellite radio. You saw it happen in stocks. All that happens when there's disruption, regulation, people start to try to get regulation to cut out competitors and or force people to use my archaic setup that's already created. They're trying to protect their moat, right? So that will happen. It's going to keep happening. So I think we should all be ready that this is just part of the game. It's part of disruption. It's part of a shifting industry. So you're going to see it a lot more. Just be ready, be prepared for it. But the second thing here, y'all, is I think you're going to see agents and investors go one of two ways. We're going to see more consolidation in the industry, for sure. So you're going to see more home buyers joining up into bigger companies or going out to different markets and collaborating with other people in the markets instead of just staying in one market. You're going to start to see that happen a lot more. Number two, you are going to see probably more people exit the industry just because there's a few... It's going to get harder to get some deals maybe for some people if you don't shift your strategy over the next 2 years. But for the ones who are going to shift their strategy, they're going to be better than ever. Like they're excited for a market shift when you shift your strategy in the right way. But then you're going to start to see a lot of agents specifically who don't shift their strategy to building authority and really separating themselves from that machine. You're going to see them become call center employees at Open Door. And it was funny. There was an Inman conference that happened about a month ago, and there was an article on it where there was like all this outrage on Inman News and everything. Oh my gosh, the Open Door guy said it. He said basically, you know, we're not trying to put agents out of business, but we'll have thousands of them working for us. And dude, I said this 2 years ago. I'm like, you're either going to get put out of business or you're going to become a call center employee if you don't stand out, build authority, and niche down and separate yourself. You're going to get commoditized to death until you become an employee for one of those big tech giants. And so you're going to start to see that happen, y'all. You're going to see some of the home buyers who have the skill set but don't have but haven't taken the chance to become an authority and an expert in their market that kind of creates that moat around you. They're going to be gobbled up or put out of business by many of those people. So Daniel's done that amazingly well in Baltimore. I mean, he's created authority there. He's got rankings all over Google, and he attracts a lot of buyers. He's got one of the biggest buyers lists, if not the biggest buyer list in all of Baltimore. And he puts out content. He engages with people. He's always meeting with people. He's out there actively creating authority. So you can better believe that he's going to be a guy who's going to not just wade through these changes. He's going to thrive. He's going to thrive through these changes. So that's all I've got to say about that, man. Any final words on the shifting market and the laws and all that stuff?
I mean, that you pretty much hit the nail on the head. It's for me, it's very exciting. I can't really add a whole lot to what you said. I mean, the market will shift in a way that will either make wholesalers, and I'll start by saying this, I'll back up a tiny bit. The legislative push isn't against wholesalers. It's against anything other than agents, right? Mm-hmm. So you mentioned Open Door, iBuyers, Zillow, all this kind of stuff. Agents are the value proposition of hiring an agent traditionally is shrinking.
Yep.
And they're spending a lot of money trying to prove that the model is still, you know, valid or whatever it is. And I'm not attacking agents or anything right now at all, but I'm just saying that seems to be where the market is shifting. Mm-hmm. So as that shifts, it doesn't matter if you're an agent, a wholesaler, but it doesn't matter what you are, you've got to add more value to your business. You've got to add more value to your clients, your sellers, your buyers, whatever it is that you're servicing, you've got to add more value. And if you can figure out how to add more value, then it shouldn't be hard for you to figure out how to adapt.
Yep.
So that's pretty much all. I mean, a really good example I like to point out, and we'll leave it at this, is years and years ago, Jeff Bezos had an investor meeting and needed to raise a bunch of money. And all these investors got together and said, the problem with Amazon is you're going to lose customers because people decide something at 9 a.m. and they go buy it at 10 a.m. Right? What did Jeff Bezos do? He introduced Prime, same day delivery.
Yep.
So it was a very expensive build out, I'm sure. I don't know the details. I don't know the whole story. But talk about a man in a business that can adapt. There you go.
Yep.
So if you think having a license is a problem or being registered with a state or disclosing things properly is an issue that you're not willing to overcome, then honestly, for me, it's not a big deal. You know, mm-hmm. I wish you the very best in some other industry, but I'm going to crush this one.
Yep. I love it. I love it, man. So let's shift over to you building the team. So you were out here at Carrot Camp a few times ago. And it was so cool, man, getting the text messages from you afterward, just seeing the shifts and transitions that you'd started to make. And man, that's something that all of us who are growing a company and who want to buy back more of our time and really make a bigger impact, we eventually hit that point to where we go, man, I can either keep on being the bottleneck and everything and grinding myself to a pulp and working a bunch of hours and working 7 days a week and all that stuff, or I can pull back and build structure, get the right people aboard, and maybe even do some bigger things. So kind of where were you business-wise when you were coming into Carrot Camp? Where were you business-wise and almost even mentally too, right? Like where were you as far as, for me, whenever I get to spots where I hadn't built the team out enough, I kind of feel overwhelmed sometimes. I kind of feel like, man, I love what I'm doing, but I'm not excited about the next few months because I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to do to get out of this kind of trap that I put myself in. Where were you at?
Yeah, so I came out to Carrot Camp, which was a fantastic experience back September 2018. So I guess a year ago. Time flies when you're building a team, I guess. But mm-hmm. So I came out there at that point. I came in mentally a little strained, maybe. I'm not sure how to put it exactly. But I came out there thinking that this, you know, what am I doing in this environment? Everyone else is much higher performing. Of course, I came into it with a little bit of a tail between my legs mentality. But I still had an open mind, right? I wanted to think openly as best I could. Turns out I'm not nearly as not nearly as confused about how to grow a business as a lot of other people are. Mm-hmm. We all had really great wins. We all had really great struggles, and that working through that sort of verbally and audibly and through presentations. Yep. As a group was fantastic. Really not knowing exactly what part of my business I wanted to grow. I think I mentioned that in my presentation, right? I had some rentals, I did some rehabs, I had some tax liens, did some wholesaling. It was very much like a wake up on Monday morning and whatever business existed, I would do. and it wasn't, it wasn't a terrible business. I made some money and it wasn't fulfilling though, that's for sure. I wasn't focused. I wasn't growing necessarily, but I came to Carrot Camp with the idea that I wanted to scale the wholesaling business. I mentioned it earlier in this podcast that I wanted to that I knew wholesaling would be easier to scale than some other stuff. And by easier, I meant less capital intensive. So there's some other stuff I could have gotten into immediately and scaled that might have taken a ton of money, mm-hmm. And I didn't want to dump that in there. So Came to Carrot Camp thinking I wanted to scale wholesaling, left Carrot Camp knowing that I wanted to scale wholesaling. Really wanted to pay some serious attention to it. So I started taking myself more seriously as a full service investment wholesaling guy, if you will, right? I can't say broker, we're not a licensed shop, but I wanted to connect with as many people as possible, buyers, sellers, everybody. I just wanted to have the largest network. And I wanted to infuse credibility in that network as quickly as possible, knowing that I needed to add people to the team, knowing that I can't do it all myself, which was sort of my primary business model for the couple of years prior. Mm-hmm. And I grew the team quickly. And for me, I wouldn't say it was a terrible experience. I've learned a lot of lessons about scaling. I've learned a lot of lessons about being a manager, if you will, or a visionary. The team expanded and contracted a couple times over the next 6 months, mm-hmm. 6 to 9 months, and learned, like I said, learned a lot of lessons. The biggest of which is probably just that I needed to really understand the process that I wanted to employ perfectly before I expected other people to get excited about it. So there might be a 10-step process and 7 or 8 steps I've got down perfectly, and 2 or 3 don't really add up, and I'm trying to push that on a team. So in a recent team contraction phase, I really spent some more time just building out super detailed processes and just super, mm-hmm. super detailed sort of operating procedures. And as we bring people into that team now, and the team is still really small, right? It's a very small but very efficient team now. Yep. If you ask me this question in January, I'd say my team is huge and we do okay.
Yeah.
If you ask me today, I'll say my team is very small and we do amazing. Mm-hmm. So that's it took me 9 months to figure out that process stuff, to figure out that efficiency stuff. And I'm still not the best leader by far. Still not the best visionary. But I'm trying to do the very best I can with what I've got, which I hope is a good system.
So. Dude, that's the thing. I mean, it's funny, literally right before I hit record here, it's the reason I was about 5 minutes late getting in. I was chatting with one of my team members just about some concerns that pop up on his end, just on some of the improvements we could make on the way we communicate some things and some of the leadership stuff. And I'm like, man, it never ends. Like, that's the thing. It never ends. And the cool thing about it is when you think you've got it down, then you're going to have to move up to a different level to scale to that next level, right? At the last Carrot Camp, I'm even thinking about bringing my little whiteboard thing over here and showing you guys this thing I drew out on it. But I have this framework that's a delegation framework. I can't remember if I talked with you guys about that at Carrot Camp when you were there, but I've made it better now, and it's very, very clear. And basically, where building a team starts in delegation, it starts with it starts with the pain. First of all, there's a pain point that you've got to feel to want to add people to a team. And it usually is tasks first, right? It's usually like, I've got a bunch of tasks that I've got to get off of my lap because I can't do my work, or I'm just overwhelmed and I just can't do enough, right? So that's the first thing you do, is you outsource tasks. And with every level of delegation that you go up, there's a process change and a communication change or cadence change that has to happen with it to make it work. So when you're delegating tasks, you're kind of at the center of that wheel. If you kind of picture like a hub and spoke, you're at the center of it. You're the hub and all the spokes are coming to you, which the spokes are the different people that are doing tasks for you. But when you're delegating tasks, there's usually a communication cadence, which is, hey, the person I just delegated to, here's the thing to do. You lay it out in a certain way. You ask them to report back to you daily what they did, what questions they have, what blocks they have, or things like that, you know? And then they send it back to you. You review it. So you always have things boomeranging back to you. You can really only make the task delegation rung work well up to about 8 people that you're directly delegating to. And then you can't do your work and things start to get crazy. The next one up is you go, cool, now I'm not going to delegate tasks. I'm going to delegate projects or project ownership. Because now, if you still look at that same wheel, I wish I had the thing up in front of me. If you look at the same wheel, now you're going, hey, person way over here in the wheel, I'm still in the middle. I'm going to delegate. I'm going to map out with you training, right, on how to do this thing. We're going to set an outcome together, clear outcome for what this project is going to do, a clear budget, clear timeline. But now you are going to now work with these 3 people to run the project for me. So now that person's working with some people to get a project done. You're just setting outcome, setting, you know, boundaries on the I call them guardrails, budget and time and stuff like that. And then the next rung up is decisions. The next rung up is planning. And then the last rung is vision. And you as, we'll post a graphic of it below here in the show notes, guys. I'll take a picture of the drawing I did at Carrot Camp. We'll put it in the show notes. But with every single rung up you take, you're going to hit a pain point. You're going to be like, oh my gosh, I thought I had that nailed and now it kind of sucks again. And it's usually a change. Cool. I need to go up that rung. I need to go to delegate projects now, or shoot, now I need to go delegate decisions. What communication change and what process do I need to add in here to make that work? And so I don't know where you are right now, man, but my guess is you're probably in that task/projects rung and maybe a little bit of decisions, but I'll send you that framework. And man, that just changed the game for me for sure.
Yeah, I absolutely love that framework. I think I've heard about this framework. I don't, maybe it was a IG live you did or something like that or whatever it was, but so heard about the framework. I'd love to see that graph. And I mean, you're totally right. You've got to get out of, as anyone on this call that's trying to build a team or trying to figure out how to scale, and you know you're not going to scale by yourself, then you've got to start somewhere. And at least, I mean, you sort of nailed it. You've got to start with tasks. It's funny, I was talking to some guy, I had dinner with some guys locally that are all doing really well. Some of the guys at InvestorFuse and then some local investors here in Baltimore, Alex Schultz and Ben Moschel and some guys. We all grabbed a bite to eat the other night. We were talking somehow someone asked me, because someone mentioned, oh, Daniel's the expert at this. I was like, I do not like being introduced that way, because let me go ahead and screw up your whole business for you with my advice. But so we're going through, so it's just some conversations about struggles, and someone said, well, what's the biggest struggle? What's your biggest struggle as an entrepreneur now? And immediately, like, I had the answer immediately, because it's my daily struggle. The struggle is me thinking that I can do something better than someone else. And in order for my business to succeed, then I must need to do it perfectly. Right. So I'm talking about tasks. I'm not talking about high level stuff. I'm talking about tasks. Mm-hmm. So I'm really actively and daily trying to shift my mindset from perfection to pass fail with tasks, right? So if you build out a process, at the end of the process, someone should either pass or fail. Either we got the task done or we didn't, right? And it shouldn't be a struggle for me or for any other entrepreneur to think, if I had done that task, it would have been done 1% better than someone else, because I can't do 100 of those tasks a day. So, and I just wanted to throw that in there. You're absolutely right. Tasks is where you need to start as an entrepreneur, I believe. And then from there, who knows what road you go down next. Maybe you hire some amazing negotiators, and now you're talking about stuff that's more of an art than a science. But
yep, I love it, man. No, I'll send it to you, dude, because like I said, as I've gone through this whole thing of my own leadership advancement and building a team, you know, I've gone through the task part and I've gone through the projects part, and I'm going through a lot of the decision stuff right now. And then the next one that I forgot to mention here was results, right? Like, right. So you can start delegating off results to the right people that can pull the results for you. That's when things start to really do amazing. But we're kind of in between that. I know I have a good hunk of the planning that right. my team members help with right now. The vision, of course, is still something that the vision is this, the CEO should be the visionary. Like that's your job. The second you start to delegate vision out is the second that business starts to struggle. You're going to be heavily involved in planning, probably leading the planning. You're going to be pulling big time results in the part that you're best at, but then you need to start to pick and choose and have a good scorecard to go, cool, who can own these results over here that I'm maybe not the best at, but they can own that. I have a scorecard that manages whether they're pulling the result well. And then they can then, when that person's pulling results, now that person can make decisions. They help run projects and they do all the tasks within that. They don't do all the tasks, but they make sure the tasks are getting done within that silo of stuff. So I love it, man. So how has that kind of transformed? How is you shifting your mindset towards, I'm not just going to go it alone. I'm going to start to build a team. I'm going to get people, whether they're contractors or employees. How is it on the other side? And I'm not asking you to paint a rosy picture. If you're like, man, things are better, but they still kind of suck, because I'm in this pain point. Like, I want to know that. But how has your day changed and kind of your outlook on your business changed since you started to go down that path?
So I'm certainly in a phase right now where I'm spending way more time on my business than I want to. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that a lot of that time, I wouldn't say is in my business. I mean, some of it is, but I'm spending a lot of time. So I'm not, you know, I haven't perfected the 4-hour work week kind of everybody's hired. And I just, you know, I'm the 4-hour visionary guy. Haven't perfected that for sure. Hmm. I would like to think that's pretty accurate. Most of my time is spent planning and growing. You know, most of my time, at least above and beyond what I would normally be doing in my business, right? So I still do talk. I still, like you said, I network with a ton of people. I still am very engaged. And at some point, maybe I'll be less engaged. Maybe I won't. I'd like that to be a choice, not a requirement, mm-hmm. right? So, but yeah, to paint an accurate picture, like I said, our team is still pretty small right now. A couple of VAs, a couple in-house people. Yep. But what I would say is that our efficiency, like I said earlier, our efficiency is super high, and I want to maintain that and add people that can match that level of efficiency. So I'm focused on adding additional team members slowly.
Cool.
Even though we have some processes that are sort of you know, inked in and are going well, I'd really want to maintain this level of efficiency and just make sure that whatever gets added matches.
Yep. I love it, man. Well, dude, I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you to go down that journey because I've found anyway, that's when you really do start to get that freedom. You really do start to get the flexibility is when you get out of that comfort zone of, man, I don't want to have a team, no matter what team looks like for you, like if it's VAs or in-house employees, whatever. Sure. But that's the biggie that I see so many people grinding away, man, at a 1 or 2 person shop. And you just bought yourself a job that you can really never get freedom from. The second that you get off that hamster wheel is the second that the hamster wheel stops, right? And then you've got to pick it back up. So I'm pumped for you, man. Hit me up if there's anything I can do to help you out. I'll give you that framework. I'm going to have my graphics guy like make it a legit worksheet and so I can train my team members on it. But that's kind of the phase that you're going to be shifting into a lot is coming up with frameworks for your business. And what I do is I either literally grab a piece of paper and start drawing stuff out, or I get my iPad out. I got the iPad Pro with a pen thingy, and I get Notability, the Notability app, and I just start drawing on it. And then I email that thing, the PDF of that drawing, over to my graphics guy, and I say, hey, can you make like a version of this? And he's got a framework for me that goes, cool, all of Trevor's processes have this certain design to them. And then I take my training to my team. And that's where you're going to get big time leverage, man. As you just start looking at those, knocking them down and create a list. I have on my cell phone, on my Apple Notes, I have a little note in there called processes or trainings or whatever frameworks. And anything that pops up in my mind, I'm like, oh, shoot, they keep on coming to me for that stuff. I should probably like document something and just train it to them and get it off of my lap and then have them report metrics to me once a week. And then I'll know, hey, is that being done right? Cool. Then I'm just managing results at that point. It's fun stuff, man. I like it. Well, Daniel, appreciate you hopping on, dude. Appreciate you helping Brady the other night too on his little project. I saw the picture Brady on my team posted. Like you guys were working the midnight oil. You were helping him out with some MailChimp stuff. And it just shows the kind of person that you are. I mean, you didn't need to do that. But you saw a guy in need and just appreciate it big time that you have been helping.
Absolutely. Brady's good people. You guys are all good people. I was happy that we figured out how to go from, you know, duct tape solution to something that actually kind of worked. But yeah, it was fun. It was fun. Right. I really appreciate your whole team.
Cool. Well, dude, where can people find out about you? Where can they follow you? If they're in markets you're in, where can they find out how to work with you?
Sure. So probably the easiest way to connect with me is just if you want to Google Baltimore Wholesale Property. We're pretty close up there. That's the same brand name, Baltimore Wholesale Property. And then Daniel DiGiacomo. Really, if you just Google Daniel DI, it come up pretty quickly. So not too many of us. But those are probably the easiest ways to connect with me. And same thing, Daniel DiGiacomo at Instagram, if you guys want to drop that in the show notes or something, if people can't figure out how to spell it.
I love it. Well, Daniel, I appreciate you, man. Everybody go follow Daniel, especially if you're wanting to learn how to really build a big buyer's list. Go follow what he's doing, see what he's done on his Carrot site. Go listen to the previous episode that we did with him where he kind of breaks down what he did. How did he build that big buyer's list? What does his company look like? So go check it out. Daniel, have an amazing rest of the week, man. Enjoy Baltimore out there and hope to see you out here in Oregon sometime soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Trevor.
Thanks, buddy. See ya.
See ya.